the gospel, we can look at, and I'm going to, from one particular point of view. These men, whoever they were, however they got there, were following reason to the best of their ability. They presumed these stars were saying something. Jupiter and Saturn, and they followed it. And they, you see, with all the signs, and even the report of these little shepherds down in Bethlehem, which is only 8 miles from Jerusalem, why doesn't anybody else go down there? Why does it take these men coming from wherever they came from to seek? And those who live right down the street don't seek. That could be us, my friends, couldn't it? That could be us. We don't seek. And so, this text, you see, is a text of the patron saint, patron saints of seekers. And as I'm going to point out, you see, the mind that continually searches for truth is a blessed mind. If it's willing to set aside whatever. What blocks us most of all from attaining to the truth? Self-interest. We don't want to find out the truth. You know, Augustine says, men love the truth when it enlightens them, but they hate it when it accuses them. You see, the truth. There are some great souls in this world, in every generation, who seek the truth. It's more important than anything else. And these magi are, as it were, their patron saints. And so, we're going to read the text, parts of the text, but I want to talk about what that means for us to be seeking the truth. It means not to be afraid of the truth. But it also means not to overhastily call something true because it corresponds to our prejudices, our comforts, our safety, or something else. You see? And so, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of King Herod, behold, magi, these people, now we know a little bit of who they are, from the east arrived, saying, where is the newborn King of the Jews? We saw his star at its rising, and have come to do him homage. Whatever this is saying, they have come to pay homage to a king, and everybody else who lives right down the street is not doing anything. You see, the Lord moves us, but we have to move with the movement. And I would say right now, you know, one of the greatest afflictions of our church is complacency. With all the problems starting, you know, wars breaking out, financial problems, fears, and so forth, we just keep on whistling Dixie. You know, we just don't get it. And we don't think finding God in a way that He takes precedence in our life and we follow His direction for our life is the greatest thing that can happen to us. So we're always doing something else, and we're busy. And in our civilization, we can be really busy. When King Herod heard this, he was greatly troubled. I've mentioned before why Herod would be troubled. He killed his wives, he killed his children, because he thought they were trying to take over the kingship. Now here comes this king of the Jews, wherever he is, he's upset. He's, you know, he's paranoid. Assembling the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They said to him, in Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it has been written through the prophets, and you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, since from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel. It's going to come from Bethlehem. The shepherds are already talking about him. These things are not happening in a corner. And yet, people are too busy to walk the 8 miles to Bethlehem to take a look. Now, Herod's willing to take a look, but he has his own agenda. You see? So Herod called the Magi secretly and ascertained from them the time of the star's appearance. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search diligently for the child. When you have found him, bring me word that I too may go and do him homage." That is really evil. That is evil. To say I'm going to do homage to this king, the Son of God, what I really want to do is kill him. So it starts here. And finally, somebody will kill him because he interferes with their comfort, their rulership. My friends, and this is part of what we hold up to ourselves and to the people on a day like this. Who is willing to search for truth? Who is willing to take time? You know, it's most men get up in the morning, gobble down breakfast, drive, work all day, come home, hardly have any time for their children. When are they going to read? They've got to find time. They've got to find time. They've got to use their mind. In the parish I help out in, you can tell those who are reading and those who aren't just from the tenor of their conversation, just from the questions they ask, the remarks they make. Seeking, you see, is important. After their audience with the king, they set out, and behold, the star that they had seen at its rising preceded them until it came and stopped over the place where the child was. This is baffling, because stars are way up. How could you tell it was stopped? I must say, it's not totally impossible. When I lived in Canada, every night in the winter, the sky was like a huge black velvet, filled, studded with millions of diamonds. Millions. Now, every once in a while, you could sort of make out that one of those diamonds was over such and such. I don't know if that's what happened, or whether what happened. But they are following something, and they are being true to it. Okay? So they went, and entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. They prostrated themselves. Who told them to prostrate themselves? How did they know? You see faith starting to burgeon in them. Yes, he's a king. They'll prostrate before a king. But he's more than a king. They opened their treasures and offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Do you remember what they offered in the psalm? Remember? They offered him gold and frankincense. So maybe they offered him 50 things. But Matthew would pick those two so you'd see the relationship and the fulfillment in the psalm. And myrrh, which is for burial. So now they've honored him. Now, where are we today in the church? Can we lead people? Every once in a while, you meet somebody, usually a physicist, because they're grappling all the time. I think many of you must have seen this film. What was the name of it? Expelled. Did you notice the anger, the venom against those who were saying, what about thinking that there might be something to this intelligent design? Why don't we follow it? They can be dismissed and have been dismissed even from tenured positions because of this. They're being punished for trying to search out the truth. Because if there is an intelligent design, there's an intelligence. And I'm not God. And I can't stand that. For two reasons. I want to be God, and two, I am frightened. I don't know who is merciful. I am frightened. So many of the great men of science and psychiatry have had recourse to the occult. to protect themselves from these forces they can't control, and maybe this force they can't control. And so they have recourse to Zoroastrianism, to all sorts of New Age, to cultivate forces. Why? Because, you see, if I'm all alone in this world, even after I've said there's no intelligent design and there's no intelligence, now I'm totally all alone. I can't stand it. So I look for some kind of power to protect me. I've talked to these men. I know that this is what they do. You can't stand in this universe all alone. It's too big, and your mind is too big. And you're not going to stay there, happy with your little physics problems. Your mind is too big. So you see, in a way, the church is the star. Are we burning brightly? Are we attractive? Do we win people over by our courtesy, by our intelligence, by our courage? You see, what are we doing to be a star, to bring people? You see, as John Paul II said, faith which does not become culture is a faith which has not been fully received. I'm going to give you the exact quote. It's right here. You see? No, it's not there. It's somewhere else. Faith which does not become culture is a faith which has not been fully received, not thoroughly thought through, and not fully lived out. Because a faith which is fully received, thoroughly thought through, and fully lived out is a way of life. It's a culture. It's not an opinion or a world view. It's a life. And that is the message of this Epiphania, the manifestation of Jesus. I'm going to urge the people to take a minute before they leave the church and beg God for a manifestation. Why not? He wants to let us know Him. We're afraid to find Him, you know. Augustine has another famous remark. Men search for the truth with the fear that they might find it. We have to be courageous. Look for it. A great example in our own day is John Paul II. You know, to be able to do this and to search for this truth like these magi. I think that that would be a great way then to gather up the other themes. What is the truth in my family? Where are my children? What are they doing? Do I have authority in their lives? I don't mean power and domination. I mean the authority of love and mutual understanding and respect. Where is the truth in my life? Where is the truth in my spirit? Where is the truth in my family? Where is the truth in my church?